back to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. We are always online at npr.org. Dan,
hey.
Jeannie, what are you guys doing in here?
I don't know. Our presence.
I smell bacon. I just wandered in.
I got a story to tell.
All right.
Well, la-dee-da.
Let's eat some bacon. Let's do the most.
Now, Dan, when you smelled the bacon, did you actually walk in, or somehow did your feet raise off the ground and you just floated through the air?
I came in Toucan Sam style. I came in here, yeah.
Okay, so thanks you guys for coming in, but we're not starting with you. We're going to start with Trisha.
Let's.
Yes, yes, because we are talking about the most emailed, most viewed, most clicked on stories on the internet, so I have one of the most read at CNN.com, and I will cop to sending this one around. Check your inboxes. Yesterday at 12:49 p.m., I sent this when I saw it on the wire, and I called it OMG.
Yes, you did.
This is the story I couldn't believe. It's about a woman who spent her entire life, well, almost her entire life, more than almost 60 years in an iron lung, and she passed away after a power failure, and her family couldn't get the generator working. So this woman, her name was Diane Odell, was 61 years old when she passed away. She lived in Memphis, Tennessee. She had polio as a child and has been in an iron lung ever since she was 3 years old.
Iron lung?
Okay, so I don't even know that people use these anymore.
I didn't either.
But it's a gigantic machine. It was like 7.5 feet long. Basically, it breathes for you. So
right.
she was in this machine. Her head was sticking out the out one end of it, and the machine, I think through use of pressure, would compress and release her lungs.
But this isn't like the boy in the bubble where she could walk around in a room. She's literally
she was laying on her back.
Have you seen the Big Lebowski? You know where they go to Larry Fletcher's house, and there's Arthur Digby Sellers, the famous writer, is in an iron lung in that scene in the movie. They're going with the kids' homework.
So that's
anything,
right.
Rachel? Anything?
So, and I'll cop to, I mean, yeah. I will cop to the freak out factor of this. Like, I couldn't believe this was true. And then I read more about this woman and how much she accomplished with nearly 60 years in an iron lung. She, you know, because of course her mind was perfectly fine. I mean, she went to high school, she got a diploma, she had a big social life, lots of family and friends.
She needed this thing to live.
Inspired people. And I actually have some sound from her brother-in-law, Will Byer. Play that clip.
That's kind of what I think inspired others, is that she came and visited Diane. She didn't complain. She was very upbeat. And basically, when people left, they realized that, you know, it didn't make a lot of sense to complain about what little things they were dealing with.
Wow.
So, yeah, Diane Odell passed away, age 61. Amazing story.
What can you say about wow? And same thing applies to this story that I have from the Rocky Mountain News, the most emailed story. Purported UFO video to be shown Friday. Jeff Peckman, who is pushing a ballot initiative to create an extraterrestrial affairs commission. He also was behind the initiative to have the city meditate for a period of time.
Wow.
So Peckman wants to have an extraterrestrial affairs commission. And part of the reason that he has this is he has this video that purports to show a living, breathing space alien. He'll be showing it to the news media Friday in Denver. Peckman, 54, said the video was among the reasons he was compelled to launch the proposed ballot initiative, which has generated news as far as South Africa. As far as South Africa? What about Nebulon 4?
Yeah.
What about
it must be true.
Yeah.
South Africa's not that far, relatively speaking.
Yeah. It's where this little alien came from, comparatively. Jeannie?
All right, well, mine was a most emailed on Yahoo. Egyptian archaeologists believe they have discovered the ancient headquarters of the Pharaoh's army. This was an outpost that protected the northeast border of Egypt for 1,500 years.
Mm-hmm.
Major, significant find. It was built on a mud brick fortress built on an old military road connecting Egypt and Syria. And for 1,500 years, we're talking about from the period of the New Kingdom, Ramses II, you guys might remember that pharaoh, all the way through the Ptolemaic period and the death of Cleopatra.
Yes,
this was the forefront. So they found this mud brick fortress, warehouses, stored grain, weapons, and the key was a couple of inscriptions of these pharaohs' names. That's how they
cool.
That's what tipped them off.
Is it Ptolemy or Ptolemy?
Ptolemy.
Ptolemy.
Is it pterodactyl or pterodactyl?
It's Ptolemy, by the way.
Ptolemy? Well, thanks for telling me.
Oh, gosh, I always thought it was Ptolemy.
Dan?
Hey, guys, I got a most email here from Yahoo
Stop
News.
Right there. Genies was the most emailed from Yahoo News. One of you is lying.
They're both most emailed.
Oh, among the most emailed.
Yes,
okay,
that's
go
right.
Ahead. Unless it's another Ptolemy story.
It is not, thankfully. Lawyer sues Delta for ruining family vacation. That's right. Delta Airlines under heat. $1 million lawsuit. This guy says his family vacation turned into a nightmare after they were stranded at an airport for days. Days. He was stranded in the airport.
What's the problem? Why can't they go get a hotel?
Well, because they kept waiting for the next flight, and then they flew to the next. They had like three different flights to get to the place, and each flight got delayed, and they'd wait for the next one, and it got worse and worse. He was stranded there.
That happened with me once with a Burger King telling me the fries will be ready in just 5 more minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Sad. Well, this guy was stranded with his wife, his 2 teenage children, and his mother for 3 days. Mm. So they want the money back from their missed hotel time and from the pain and suffering. They say they were literally one of the Delta employees literally walked away chuckling. Lydia left them stranded. And this is similar to what happened. Actually, my brother and sister-in-law flew on Delta just like a month ago, and their reservation got screwed up. So one of them wasn't in business class. They were supposed to both be in business class. My sister-in-law went up to visit my brother-in-law in business class. The flight attendant stopped her, screamed at her, threatened her,
what?
Sent her back to her seat, and then called Homeland Security. And they had agents waiting for them at the gate when they got out of the plane because she had the audacity to attempt to see her husband in business class.
Well, it sounds like someone has no class, and it's not your sister.
Right, I'm afraid in this case it might be Delta.
Horrible.
So by this guy who sued Delta's calculation, what's her pain and suffering worth? About half a mil?
Yeah, well, maybe they should
more than a mil.
Maybe they should join forces and get some kind of class.
By the way, what's the guy suing? What's he do for a living?
He's a lawyer.
Yeah. Rachel.
Okay, mine is one of the most emailed from the New York Times. The headline, Monkeys Control a Robot Arm with Their Thoughts.
That's like 6 great words in a row.
This is the perfect storm of awesomeness.
Monkey Robot. Cool. ESP.
So cool. This is a study that's been released online by the journal Nature. It was released Wednesday. And pretty much basically what the scientists have proven is that monkeys can think to themselves. All they have to do is think, move that mechanical arm to pick up said pellet of banana and put it in my mouth, and then the mechanical arm does it, and then they get their banana pellet.
Do monkeys think in robot speak? Is that what I'm trying to say?
Robot involved.
I didn't know you spoke monkey robot, Rachel. Yeah.
There are lots of things you don't know about me, Dan.
She could also do the monkey robot, which is this.
Yeah, the robot arm is the easiest thing to manipulate, at least in terms of the robot dance. So I'm not that impressed by these monkeys, frankly.
Luckily, most is on video, too, and the monkey robot can be seen by me.
Okay, do you want to hear about the real-life applications of this
quickly?
More? It's important because they are trying to perfect this technology because of all... there are a lot of people out there who have had limbs that have been cut off in accidents, but specifically all the veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. So... there you go, monkey arms, machines, robots. You guys are such boys that way. Ian Chillog, you're wrapping it up with a
speaking
story.
Speaking of segues, I also have a story about monkeys.
Really?
Yeah, this is one of the most emailed at NPR. It's from Day to Day.
He's not a monkey.
There's a new book about Project NIM at Columbia, the monkey that they tried to train with American Sign Language.
He's a chimp. What I'm saying is he's a chimp.
Okay. Back in the 70s. They tried to train this chimp, Nim, to speak sign language.
Uh-huh.
And he lived with an American family on the Upper West Side here in Manhattan. And some of the family members who lived with him are talking about the ethics of the study now, you know, many years later. Friend of the BPP, Margot Adler, has more.
Jenny Lee, Nim's surrogate sister, remembers the day Nim came to live with her family. She was 10.
He was coming off the plane with my mom, wrapped up in baby blankets, and he was this tiny newborn being who happened to be a chimp. And it was probably love at first sight.
Nim Chimpsky is a pun on Noam Chomsky, the MIT linguist who has theorized that language as we know it is unique to humans. Project Nim hoped to disprove Chomsky, to show that a chimpanzee could develop language. The project was run by Columbia University psychologist Herbert Terrace.
Everybody agrees that words are learned one at a time, but that syntax seems to emerge spontaneously. So the question is, what would Nim do?
He chose Stephanie Lafarge to be Nim's surrogate mother. For Lafarge, who was studying psychology, it was thrilling. She says a chimp is 5 times as strong as a human being, yet its touch is unbelievably gentle.
I wasn't even aware of what the role of a chimpanzee mother, surrogate mother, would be. It was to have this body attached to you for almost 2 years, period.
And that's what she did. She raised the chimp like a child, including it in her sprawling, chaotic, blended family, along with 7 kids. Jenny Lee says it was kind of nutty.
Were you making, you know, sloppy joes for 7 kids or 2 kids, and who was doing the dishes, and were you sharing your room that night, or were you not?
Raising a chimp in a human family might raise questions now, but 35 years ago, a lot less was known about chimpanzees. Bob Ingersoll was a graduate student working at the Institute in Oklahoma where Nim was born.
From the 1975 perspective, it didn't seem misguided at all. You know, I mean, handing out chimp babies to just about anyone that wanted one. And that gives you a kind of an understanding of how little we knew.
Soon, Nim was breaking things all over the house. Stephanie Lafarge's husband was never comfortable with Nim. Finally, Herbert Terrace put Nim in a different home. Nim learned about 125 signs, but was he really learning language? One day, watching a video of Nim signing with a teacher, Terrace says he had an epiphany.
Nim was tracking most of the teacher signs, imitating most of the teacher signs. He almost never made a sign spontaneously.
Terrace came to believe that Nim would never use language the way humans do to form sentences and express ideas. That was the end of the project. Nim was returned to the Research Institute in Norman, Oklahoma, to live a very different life, in a cage with other chimps. But Bob Ingersoll says his life wasn't a bad one.
In the sense that he was with his own brothers, he got to have a chimp group that wasn't necessarily always controlled by humans.
But in 1981, all funding ended for the Institute. There was no exit plan for the chimps. Within a year, Nim was sold to a medical lab for tuberculosis studies. Nim's supporters managed to rescue him, and he was taken to Cleveland Amory's Black Beauty Ranch in Texas, an animal sanctuary, where Nim died in the year 2000. Jenny Lee, Nim's surrogate sister, was in college when Nim was taken to the medical lab. How do you reconcile, she says, a tiny chimp in blue baby blankets, drinking from a bottle and wearing Pampers?
Those are the baby pictures, and then when he's 10, him in a lab, in a cage, with nothing soft, nothing warm, no people. You know, this is my brother. You know, this is somebody that I raised, and that the system could let this happen was shocking.
Stephanie Lafarge, Nim's surrogate mother, says today she believes that taking Nim into her home was totally unethical.
Essentially tricking him into thinking he's a human being with no plan whatsoever of protecting him.
I don't think what was done to Nim was unethical.
Says Herbert Terrace, given that people eat meat, have pets, train horses to race. Elizabeth Hess interviewed all these people and many more for her book, Nim Chimpsky, The Chimp Who Would Be Human. She says Nim was an amazing survivor. She says Project Nim would never happen today, and the debate over the project continues.
Whether chimps have language or don't have language, and what is their own language? The surprising thing is how little we know about how animals communicate.
Researchers today, she says, are looking at how prairie dogs warn each other, how birds know where to fly. They are asking a better question. How do animals communicate?
That was NPR's Margot Adler with a report that first aired on Day to Day.